In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared to me, Daniel, after that which appeared to me at the first. And I saw in the vision, and when I saw, I was in Susa, the capital, which is in the province of Elam. And I saw in the vision, and I was at the Ulai Canal. I raised my eyes and saw, and behold, a ram standing on the bank of the canal. It had two horns, and both horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher one came up last. I saw the ram charging westwards and northwards and southwards. No beast could stand before him, and there was no one who could rescue from his power. He did as he pleased and became great. As I was considering, behold, a male goat came from the west across the face of the whole earth without touching the ground. And the goat had a conspicuous horn between his eyes. He came to the ram with the two horns, which I had seen standing on the bank of the canal, and he ran at him with his powerful wrath. I saw him come close to the ram, and he was enraged against him and struck the ram and broke his two horns. And the ram had no power to stand before him, but he cast him down to the ground and trampled on him. And there was no one who could rescue the ram from his power. Then the goat became exceedingly great. But when he was strong, the great horn was broken, and instead of it, there came up four conspicuous horns towards the four winds of heaven. Out of one then came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great towards the south, towards the east, and towards the glorious land. It grew great, even to the host of heaven. And some of the host and some of the stars threw it down to the ground and trampled on them. It became great, even as great as the prince of the host. And the regular burnt offering was taken away from him, and the place of his sanctuary was overthrown. And a host will be given over to it together with the regular burnt offering because of transgression. And it will throw truth to the ground, and it will act and prosper. Then I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to the one who spoke, "For how long is the vision concerning the regular burnt offering, the transgression that makes desolate, and the giving over of the sanctuary and host to be trampled underfoot?" And he said to me, "For 2,300 evenings and mornings, then the sanctuary shall be restored to its rightful state."
That's page 902 of the Church Bibles, Daniel 8, verse 15. "When I, Daniel, had seen the vision, I sought to understand it. And behold, there stood before me one having the appearance of a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of the Ulai, and it called, 'Gabriel, make this man understand the vision.' So he came near where I stood, and when he came, I was frightened and fell on my face. But he said to me, 'Understand, O son of man, that the vision is for the time of the end.' And when he had spoken to me, I fell into a deep sleep with my face to the ground. But he touched me and made me stand up. He said, 'Behold, I will make known to you what shall be at the latter end of the indignation, for it refers to the appointed time of the end. As for the ram that you saw with the two horns, these are the kings of Media and Persia. And the goat is the king of Greece. And the great horn between his eyes is the first king. As for the horn that was broken, in place of which four others arose, four kingdoms shall arise from his nation, but not with his power. And at the latter end of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their limit, a king of bold countenance, one who understands riddles, shall arise. His power shall be great, but not by his own power, and he shall cause fearful destruction and succeed in what he does, and destroy mighty men and the people who are the saints. By his cunning he shall make deceit prosper under his hand, and in his own mind he shall become great. Without warning he shall destroy many, and he shall even rise up against the prince of princes, and he shall be broken, but by no human hand. The vision of the evenings and the mornings that has been told is true, but seal up the vision, for it refers to many days from now. And I, Daniel, was overcome and lay sick for some days. Then I rose and went about the king's business, but I was appalled by the vision and did not understand it."
When I got my first mobile phone, it was with a company called Orange, whose tagline was, "The future's bright, the future's orange." Well, obviously they were wrong. Even the company that sold me that phone are not called Orange anymore. They're called EE. And as for the future, well, I don't know what colour you'd give it, but certainly not orange. That'll teach me to rely on a mobile phone company to tell me about the future, won't it? Far better to ask the God who reveals the future, the Most High, whom we've been getting to know better over the course of this book of Daniel. But what colour would he say the future is? That might seem like an odd question with which to begin a talk on Daniel 8. Daniel 8 is quite an odd passage to begin with, let alone what colour is it talking about. But in many ways, I think it's a useful question for us to think about as we look at these verses. What colour is the future? We've been looking at this book of Daniel for the past 2 months. A book which, as you can see from the top right of the handout that's inside the sheet you were given by the door, is a book of two halves. The first half, the Aramaic bit, what some people call the easy bit. The fun bit, the bit where God uses the events of Daniel's life to teach three crucial lessons about himself. That he reveals the future, that he rescues his people, and that he rules. He appoints those who rule over humanity. And then we get the second half, the bit that some people call the hard bit, but which I like to call the really fun bit. The bit where we get those big lessons applied to the future of God's people. The bit that is designed to help the people of God understand what they are about to face and to keep believing the big lessons from the first half, even as they're facing it. You can see from 8 verse 1 of our passage, you might need to flip back a page, that we're in the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar. In other words, it's about 548 BC, about a decade before the kingdom of Persia was established. And that is worth underlining because it means that all of the events predicted in this chapter were in the future for Daniel. In fact, some of them were centuries away from happening. But you'll also notice that while there's lots of detail about specific horns, weirdly, and geography, there is nothing on names and dates. Because the purpose here is not a history lesson, but a future lesson. And not revising historical details, though we'll do a little bit of that, but preparing for what was to come. And that means that we're not looking for a checklist of names, but a sense of the experience. Like a song might give you a sense of the mood, or a colour might give you a sense of the tone. They were given a vision of what it would be like so that they would be ready to face it. And actually, it remains useful to us too for the same purpose. Not that we're about to face exactly the same history this chapter reveals. There was a specific time and place this vision was referring to. But the future it described, what Daniel ends up calling appalling, the persecution that it describes has become something of a pattern for God's people. And if we are to face that same persecution and survive, if we are going to face persecution and stay Christian, well, then we'll need to listen up. For most of us, this is not persecution that we're going to face tomorrow, not this kind of persecution. It might be 20, 30, 40 years in the future. But if we are going to stay Christian when that persecution comes, it means we'll need to listen up today. We need to pay attention to Daniel 8. We need to grab the vision by the horns, pun intended, and take it to heart. So let's dive into the vision. And point one on the handout, if you'd find that useful, a vision of fearsome beasts. A vision of fearsome beasts. In fact, you'll see from the top of the handout that actually I was given the title by George, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Thank you, George, wherever you are. It's a great title. It's basically the two halves of this talk, Fantastic Beasts and then what they correspond to, where you can find them on the second half. Brilliant. But I've gone for Fearsome Beasts because I think Fantastic doesn't quite cover it. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is actually basically the wrong film. As I suggested last week, we should be thinking more like a King Kong film or Godzilla. Maybe you've seen those bus adverts. Godzilla, is it Godzilla times Kong or X Kong? I can't quite work out what it's supposed to be. The New Empire. Has anyone seen these bus adverts? No one has seen these. They're everywhere. You'll notice them this week. I was actually walking past a bus with this with George earlier in the week, and he said to me, Tim, I didn't think that was your kind of film. And he's right. Just to be clear, it's not my kind of film. I've had to watch it specially, and not that one, because that's not out yet, but I've been watching Godzilla and Kong and that kind of thing. And the reason I've been doing it is because that is the genre of Daniel 8. Look at verse 3. I just look back at verse 3. Daniel says, I raised my eyes and saw, and behold, a ram standing on the bank of the canal. It had two horns, and both horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher one came up last. Are you picturing this? This ram here. Here's Daniel, happily tucked away in Babylon, but he's seeing a vision of over 200 miles away in Susa, the capital of Persia, a ram. And just like the second beast we were introduced to last week was raised up on one side, so this beast has one horn higher than the other. It's telling us about the same thing. And we're told, verse 4, that it was charging westward and northwards and southwards. Now, when you describe a ram's movement in terms of compass points, we're not talking about it kind of frolicking around in a field, are we? No, it's marking out the territory of an empire, which is why verse 4 continues, no beast could stand before him, and there was no one who could rescue from his power. He did as he pleased and became great. Last year, I overheard a conversation between Cassie, who's one of the student workers here now, and one of the associates. I went like this. The associate said, I've been looking on YouTube for how to defeat a kangaroo. So how do you defeat a kangaroo? Cassie asked. You can't, he said. Every video I've watched, the kangaroo wins. Well, that is the ram here. Every beast it fights, it wins. Forget King Kong, this is King Ram. Except there is one that beats it. Look at verse 5. As I was considering, behold, a male goat came from the west across the face of the whole earth without touching the ground. That's not just some goat hopping over a puddle, is it? Across the face of the whole earth. And it's so powerful, it takes down even this undefeatable ram. Verse 7, I saw him come close to the ram. And he was enraged against him and struck the ram and broke his two horns. And the ram that was too powerful for every other beast, that ram had no power to stand before it. But he cast him down to the ground and trampled on him. And there was no one who could rescue the ram from its power. Then the goat became exceedingly great. But when he was strong, the great horn was broken. And instead of it, there came up four conspicuous horns towards the four winds of heaven. Maybe if you were remembering last week, we had last week a beast that had the power of flight and four heads. Well, now we've got a beast with the power of flight and four horns. Again, it's corresponding to the same thing. Beasts 2 and 3 last week, the ram and the goat this week, they represent the same thing. And just like last week, we're supposed to see this and fear. Now, there's a cartoon on the opposite page of the handout you might have spotted there to try and help us understand something of what's going on, the ram with its two horns and the goat flying over the face of the earth. But the problem with that cartoon is that it creates, well, beasts that look a bit cute. They're not cute. Not in Daniel 8. They're monstrous. And if you're not convinced, then read on. Look at verse 9. Out of one of these horns came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great towards the south, towards the east, and towards the glorious land. This goat had one horn that became four horns. We'll work out why that's the case later. But then one of those four horns becomes a little horn. And that little horn seems especially important. It spreads the reach of its power in all directions, including towards the glorious land. That is Israel. And yet it wants to pick an even bigger fight. Verse 10, it grew great, even to the host of heaven. And some of the host and some of the stars it threw down to the ground and trampled on them. Heaven's armies and the stars, they get thrown down to the ground. And we're looking at this goat and we're thinking that there's something godlike about its power, aren't we? The next two verses have been described by some commentators as the most puzzling in the whole book. And if you know anything about Daniel, it's got stiff competition. But even if the details are a little tricky, it's not hard to get a sense of the tone and feel. Verse 11, it became great, even as great as the prince of the host. And the regular burnt offering was taken away from him, and the place of his sanctuary was overthrown. The prince of the host, the ruler of this army from heaven, surely that's God, isn't it? The Most High. But the goat seems to be on a par with him, taking away the burnt offering, overthrowing the sanctuary, the temple. They're having a battle, but rather than the goat being destroyed, the goat prospers, verse 12, and a host will be given over to it together with the regular burnt offering because of transgression. And it will throw truth to the ground, and it will act and prosper. A God and the goat, they're in this battle, but the goat seems to be winning. Hard enough when a foreign power comes in and topples your government. But are you going to keep believing when it topples your God? At the end of the vision, it tells us it's just for a time. Daniel kind of eavesdrops on this angelic conversation and is told it'll be 2,300 evenings and mornings. Either that's 2,300 of each of them, that's about 6 years, just over, or it's counting mornings and evenings and adding them together, which should make it about 3 years. But whether it's 6 years or threes, the point is it's just for a time. And then, as verse 14 puts it, then the sanctuary shall be restored to its rightful state. Just for a time, but it's not going to be an easy time, is it? It's a fearsome one. It's an appalling one. The future's not bright. It's not orange. The future is, well, I don't know what color, but it's hardship. It's not hard to picture the perspective of one of God's people in the midst of this. When the prince of the host, when God seems to be defeated, when his truth is thrown down to the ground, when the enemies of God are prospering, it's easy to imagine what God's people would think then, isn't it? Is God really in charge? Indeed, it would be easy for Christians today to have that same perspective. Daniel's vision was in Susa, in Persia. A picture of what it's like to be there now in Iran, where it is illegal to convert from Islam to Christianity, where house churches are regularly raided and their members are sent to prison just for turning up to meet with God's people. I was reading this morning about a guy called Moshen and his wife Simin, who began their own house church because the pastor of their previous one had been arrested. But as people became believers in their house church, the family of one of them reported them all to the authorities, and they themselves were arrested. Moshen sentenced to hard labor, and Simin fined and losing her job as a nurse. It's easy to imagine what they must be thinking. Is God really in charge? And to my shame, it doesn't even require such fierce persecution for me to ask that sort of question. When I face a bit of hostility for being a Christian, when I'm kind of denounced by my friends as an idiot or worse for believing what God says, even that's enough to make me go, I don't get it, Lord, why? Is God really in charge? But this vision has been given in order to put these harsh realities into perspective. Now, that's point two on the handouts. This vision puts the frightening future into perspective. The second half of this passage explains what all of it means. Indeed, the angel is invited to make Daniel understand the vision. Now, let's hope he helps us to understand the vision too as we read what he said. It's at least clear from what follows that it is a prediction about what was to come over the next 400 years. I say 400 years, that the angel does talk about the time of the end, and so we might think it's talking about the end of the world. But that phrase is sometimes used by prophets in the Bible to refer to the end of a state of affairs. And if we're in any doubt that it's talking about the immediate future, we're told explicitly in verse 20 Verse 20, as for the ram that you saw with the two horns, these are the kings of Media and Persia. And the goat is the king of Greece. He's talking about the empires, the very empires that govern the next 400 years in the Middle East. And you can see in the table the elements of the vision and the specific bits of history they predicted. The Median Empire, some of us will know if we're history buffs, was taken over by the Persian king Cyrus. And while some Medes still had some power in that kingdom, it was basically a Persian kingdom. Theirs was the higher horn. And their empire became the biggest empire that the region had ever known. If, like me, you didn't know anything about it, then I can recommend this book, Persian Fire, by Tom Holland, who some of us will know because of the podcast, The Rest is History. Really interesting book. It is about 400 pages long, and it illustrates one verse of this passage. So it wasn't the best use of time that I've ever given, but it is really interesting. And he talks at one point about how the Persians were an enemy whose very name, when spoken, was sufficient to send a shiver down the spine. As we read in verse 4, no beast could stand before him, and there was no one who could rescue from his power. And yet, just as the vision tells of the ram's defeat by the goats, so the end of this book recalls that the entire Persian Empire was taken over by the Greeks. In fact, by a particular Greek king, Alexander the Great. A takeover that took just 12 years. As verse 21 talks about it, the goat is the king of Greece, and the great horn between his eyes is that first king. And just as the great horn was followed by four conspicuous horns, so when Alexander died, his kingdom ended up being divided between his four generals who started warring for further power. And just as one of those four horns gives rise to a little horn in our passage, so one of these generals had as his successor a guy called Antiochus IV Epiphanes. Antiochus, a name so popular at that time that we have to differentiate it from the 12 other Antiochuses who were around. Antiochus IV Epiphanes. And just as verse 11 says that he takes away the regular burnt offering, and verse 12 says he throws truth to the ground, so also we can read about him in the history books, about him desecrating the temple and burning copies of the law of Moses. And just as, and I could keep going, and I could read from the history books where it follows the predictions of these verses exactly, but the danger is we'd miss the point. Because as I've said already, this isn't a history lesson. It's a future lesson. And we start to think Daniel 8 is a history lesson, encouraging us to line up all of these kings and see how powerful they were. But actually, it's a future lesson, helping them to prepare for the future. Yes, everything does line up. If you're here as someone who's not a Christian, here is a wonderful truth about God that you have to contend with. He can predict the future to extraordinary detail. But the point for Daniel and his readers was not that they lined it all up, that they got a kind of clipboard out and went, all right, okay, there's number one, that's the first horn, and four horns coming. Can anyone see the four horns? That's not the point. No, it's a future lesson. And that means it doesn't matter if you've never heard of any of these kings. Daniel hadn't. By all means, check out the history books. Or let me say, the ESV Study Bible has a great section on this. But see it as a future lesson. A lesson designed to put this future into perspective. A lesson designed to prepare God's people to step into this future. When yet another empire defeats God's people, you would struggle to believe that God was in power, except that he predicted it all beforehand. And he put it into this perspective. These verses are here so that Daniel and his readers would face what is coming in all of its terror, and that they would do so convinced of the three key lessons from the beginning of the book. Can you remember them? God reveals, God rules, and God rescues. God reveals in remarkable detail 400 years of prediction, so accurate that some scholars just can't believe that this was written beforehand in spite of the evidence. The future here is not a surprise to God. He knows it with crystal clarity, and it worked out exactly as he said. Which means that you can believe him when as he says, secondly, he rules. He's the one who puts all of these in power. Yes, these kings will look like rivals to God. But as we saw of Nebuchadnezzar back in chapter 4 and Belshazzar in chapter 5, they are subject to the power of the Most High. So the kings of Persia and Greece, they are subject to him, subject to the Most High, even when they rise up against him. We actually get clues of that in these verses. Look at verse 24, speaking of this little horn, Antiochus the Fourth. His power shall be great, but not by his own power. Or the end of verse 25. And he shall even rise up against the prince of princes, and he shall be broken, but by no human hand. The goat might be able to leap across the Middle East in a single bound. Alexander the Great and his generals and Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes, they will seem like their power is great. But it's not by their own power. They are on God's leash. God reveals. God rules. And thirdly, God rescues. Verse 26 reminds us, the vision of the evenings and the mornings that has been told is true. In other words, it really is just for a time. Verse 14, 2,300 evenings and mornings, then the sanctuary shall be restored to its rightful state. The Persians and the Greeks, they're going to look like they have, like they've defeated God. But their time on the throne really is just for a time. Even when a mighty superpower emerges out of nowhere, even when that power oppressing God's people is defeated by a greater, more impressive power, even when the victories of God's people are a dim and distant memory, even then, God reveals, God rules, and God rescues. And so when in 167 BC, Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes desecrated the temple and burned the books of the law, a loyal Jewish person could hold their head high and they could resist this oppressive regime, trusting in this word. And so for us today, because this isn't just a prediction for this specific moment in history, it is also a pattern. This chapter has been focused on the second and third beasts of Daniel 7, Persia and Greece, the 400 years that would follow. But some of us might have noticed that it comes with features of the fourth beast we learned about last week as well. Today's passage, it's definitely beasts 2 and 3. But when we read about horns and a little horn that oppresses God's people, that also feels a bit like beast number 4. In other words, Daniel 8, it is about Persia and Greece. But it also sets up a pattern that applies after Persia and Greece. As though the goat here is a kind of trendsetter for the kingdoms that would come later. A pattern that will be repeated throughout history. That's what some of these commentaries have been saying as I've been reading them very helpfully. Jim Hamilton, in his book With the Clouds of Heaven, says it like this. The book of Daniel predicts that this pattern will continue as history weaves its long tapestry. In fact, Ernest Lucas points out that that's how the New Testament uses these ideas. Maybe you were thinking that as we were reading it, if you're familiar with what the Bible says. This language gets picked up again and again in the New Testament and applies it to later dates. It applies it to this time that we're in as Christians. Daniel 8 is about the time of the Persians and Greeks, but it's also about the experience of God's people ever since. And that's why Jesus says in Mark 13, a chapter riddled with language of Daniel, that nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. Brother will deliver brother over to death and the father his child, and children will rise against parents and have them put to death. And you'll be hated by all for my name's sake, but the one who endures to the end will be saved. We weren't there in 167 BC. But it doesn't mean that we will be spared from this experience. As we face this pattern worked out again, we need to hear again that God reveals and God rules and God rescues, even when the goat strikes. And so today, as the Iranian government storm house churches and arrest Christians, they can hold their heads high. Mohsen and Simin can resist that oppressive regime, trusting in the word of the Lord. Indeed, that's what they've done. And you can read about them if you go to the Open Doors website. Of course, that's not us tomorrow. It does have application to us tomorrow. When you face that low-level persecution in your office or your classroom, where people reject the rule of King Jesus, it will be helpful to know these lessons then. But I'm not going to get killed tomorrow or arrested or fined, as far as I know, for being a Christian. And yet that could easily be us in 20, 30, 40 years. The world of today would have been unrecognizable 40 years ago. Is it hard to believe that might be the case again in the future? Alexander the Great took over the whole Persian Empire in 12 years. Is it hard to believe that in your lifetime, London might be a place where Christians face the death penalty for their belief? And let me tell you what my fear is for us. For us here, us in this room. My fear is that we won't be ready. We expect an easy life. We think God promises us comfort, not foreign oppressive persecution. But we think the future's bright, the future's orange. And let me tell you, the reason that is my fear for us is because I can see it in me. And then I read this passage. The point is not to get us panicking. The point is to get us preparing. Today, when we've got relative freedom, but we know this pattern will come round again. And when it does, are we going to be ready? Will we have heard the message of Daniel 8? A message proven true in history that the future is not bright, it's not orange. The future's hardship. But God reveals, God rules, God rescues, even when the goat strikes. Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. Brother will deliver brother over to death, and the father his child, and children will rise against parents and have them put to death. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. Let me lead us in a prayer. Our Father, we do praise you that you, the Most High God, reveal and rule and rescue. And so we pray that you would wake us up to the appalling reality that is right now for so many Christians around the world, and perhaps for us in the not too distant future. Please, would you establish in us a deep confidence in your sovereign rule, that we may be able to endure. For we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.